Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
The T-Biz podcast delivers T-news that you need to know. A recap of the week's major headlines with commentary and cultural trends hosted by Dan Bolton. It is the voice of origin for tea professionals and enthusiasts worldwide.
Tea nourishes and inspires. It is an ancient plant-based medicine that simultaneously heals and energizes the body as it soothes the mind. Making fine tea is a blend of artistry and craftsmanship. The $200 billion tea trade is fundamentally local, yet exerts global influence, employing millions to enhance the well-being of all. Hello, everyone. Here are this week's headlines. Sri Lanka boosts tea workers' wages by 70%. Lipton reformulates and expands its green tea lineup. And gene research may help fortify freezing tea plants. Plus, sensors and food safety. Packaged herbal infusions are generally safe to drink, but there are rare instances that highlight the importance of food safety procedures. One such incident occurred recently when Yogi Tea voluntarily recalled about 877,000 tea bags in 54,000 boxes that contained echinacea, in a certified organic herbal blend. There was no Camellia sinensis in the product. Food safety scientist Brian Coakley is an avid tea drinker, food safety consultant, and the author of 150 Food Science Questions Answered, a book published by Simon & Schuster. He earned a doctorate in food science from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, where he studied the biological effect of savory flavors from plant-based sources on mammalian cells. Brian joins us today in a conversation that touches on sensory input, tea processing, and the challenge of keeping the tea supply chain clean and safe. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
What makes a perfect cup of Ceylon tea? The perfect cup is from the tea businesses that ensure the protection of all the children living within their tea estates. We salute Keilani Valley, Telawakili, Bogawanthalawa, Harana, and Eliptia tea estates. Support Save the Children, Sri Lanka.
A government-mandated 70% increase in salaries for tea workers to 1,700 rupees, which is about $5.63 per day U.S., will make tea exports uncompetitive, according to tea industry leaders who say the wage hike will increase production costs by 45%. On Monday, Sri Lanka's labor commissioner said the increase is necessary to offset the country's much higher cost of living following a two-year financial crisis. Additional wages are needed to pay high-interest loans and provide essential foodstuffs and school fees. Regional plantation companies and the Sri Lankan State Plantation Corporation currently pay workers 1,000 rupees a day. The new base wage will raise that to 1,350 a day plus 350 rupees as a special daily allowance and 80 rupees for every kilo of raw leaf above the minimum 22 kilos harvested. DM Sandra Woon, representing the Tea Smallholders Association, told Asian News that production cost average 230 per kilo rupees. Quote, the cost of fertilizer, wages, and other expenses, including administration charges, is more than the amount we generate. So how can we increase wages? It is impossible, he said. The island annually exports about 95% of the 250 million kilos of tea it produces, earning about $1.2 billion in U.S. dollars. Spokesman Roshan Rajadurai of the Planners Association of Ceylon told reporters the wage mandate is unsustainable and unfair. Quote, "This decision was made without proper consultation and will result in the quality of Sri Lanka tea declining. Sri Lanka's key rivals, India and Kenya, have lower prices and higher productivity," he said. Business Insight. Labor unrest is a concern. In April, thousands of Tamil workers staged a token strike demanding a higher daily wage in protests that were organized by the Ceylon Workers' Congress and affiliated labor unions. The protests were nonviolent. Workers cited Tetley and Lipton teas and infusions as multinationals that exploit workers who say they must skip meals and send their children to work to compensate for low wages. The Institute of Social Development, ISD, concluded that many Sri Lankan workers who receive a minimum wage do not earn a living wage, defined as a threshold for a decent family life free of poverty, with decent housing, access to education, health care, social interaction, and culture at the current level of socioeconomic development for the country. Lipton Teas and Infusions has reformulated its signature line of green teas. The brand's Rainforest Alliance certified green tea now includes jasmine, peach, lemon, honey ginger, and decaffeinated green tea. Raquel Harris Mason, president of North American Lipton Teas and Infusions, said the tea blends feature refreshing fruit flavors and functional benefits from naturally occurring flavonoids. Quote, "I'm thrilled that tea drinkers will experience Lipton's great taste in green tea innovations that also support well-being," end quote, she said. Flavonoids are bioactives found in tea, vegetables, and fruit. A serving of unsweetened Lipton Signature Blend green tea contains approximately 100 milligrams of flavonoids, has zero calories, and is 99.5% water. When you enjoy it hot or iced, this blend uplifts your mind and body, making it a fantastic addition to your wellness routine, said Lipton. The teas are available in 20-count and 40-count packages and began rolling out at major U.S. retailers and e-commerce platforms in May. Concerns over yield and quality make headlines on blazing hot summer days. But tea plants worldwide also experience unusually bitter cold during seasonal transitions. Extreme temperatures are fatal at both ends of the thermometer. In January, South India's Tamil Nadu tea growing region experienced near zero temperatures. Tea gardens near Uti, covered in heavy frost, reported temperatures of 1 degree Celsius on January 17th. Researchers Hong Tao Wang and Fang Fang Xu recently published in the journal Scientific Reports a study on the impact of low temperatures on tea plants. Quote, "Global climate change has exacerbated various adverse effects on agriculture, with low temperature stress being the primary cause of damage to the plant cell membrane," end quote, they write. According to the two researchers, cell membranes are crucially affected by low-temperature stress that hampers cell photosynthesis, gas exchange, chloroplast development, and synthesis. Quote, "Therefore, developing low-temperature-resistant plant varieties is a key challenge in plant breeding to mitigate the hazards caused by low-temperature stress," end quote, they wrote. The study identified 66 members of the GLK gene family in tea plants, which were then categorized into 7 groups by function. The GLK group contains many elements that trigger plant hormones and stress resistance. One in particular, CSGLK54, is a gene that may play an important regulatory role in low-temperature conditions. The study provides a foundation for further analysis of the mechanisms for regulating stress at low temperatures. Research on the GLK group has increased since 1998, when it was discovered as an important transcription factor in plant growth and development. More in a minute, but first, this important message.
Hello, I'm Bogdan, a passionate tea drinker and the inventor of the ultimate tea machine, the Brewmaker One. Preparation is key to making fine tea. Sequential steepings deliver the best taste possible and unlock the true value of whole leaf teas and botanicals. Brew automates that process without using any pots or capsules. This simple-to-operate smartphone-controlled device stores steeping profiles to consistently make great tea at the push of a button. Brew also reduces time, waste, and energy. That's because I engineered the brew to remember control settings for temperature, brewing time, and quantity. Using my patented process lets you stack steeps simply and conveniently.
Packaged herbal infusions are generally safe to drink, but there are rare instances that highlight the importance of food safety procedures. One such incident occurred recently when Yogi Tea voluntarily recalled about 877,000 tea bags and 54,000 boxes that contained echinacea in a certified organic herbal blend. There's no Camellia sinensis in the product. East West Tea Company, the owners of the Yogi brand, notified the Food and Drug Administration in March of test results that showed elevated levels of pesticide residues in concentrations, quote, above action levels, end quote. The company did not disclose the type or amounts of residue when asked. There are no reports of ill effect. Food safety scientist Brian Quokley is an avid tea drinker, food safety consultant, and the author of 150 Food Science Questions Answered, published by Simon & Schuster. He earned a doctorate in food science from the University of Wisconsin at Madison, where he studied the biological effect of savory flavors from plant-based sources on mammalian cells. Brian joins us today in a conversation that touches on sensory input, tea processing, and the challenge of keeping the tea supply chain clean and safe. Brian is a faculty research fellow in the Department of Chemistry at Pacific Lutheran University, who consults with several food and beverage companies. In 2023, Lux Life magazine named him Consultant of the Year and presented Brian with a Global Vegan Award for researching ways to convert agricultural waste into feedstocks that can be used to make alternative proteins. Welcome, Brian. Will you describe to listeners how you learned to love tea?
Historically, I've always had an interest in, you know, herbs and teas and different ways to sort of ingest healthful compounds over time. And I've always loved drinking tea as a kid. I always fondly remember my mom brewing a cup of tea in the morning and then, you know, we're sharing that. So to me, you know, even now I share that love with my wife, who's more of a coffee drinker, I will say, but we definitely can agree on tea as sort of a place to meet in terms of, you know, caffeinated drinks. There's just so many memories I have about tea and tea drinking. And, you know, as I learn more and more as an amateur, you know, the different varieties, the processing steps, and a lot of the history, it continues to fascinate me. And there's just so much research and literature about tea. You know, as a scientist, I can just kind of get locked down on, you know, endless reading and papers.
Let's start by asking, is tea safe to drink?
I believe so. You see so many benefits from tea. Tea is still quite safe to drink. And there's definitely ways to make it safer. But I don't see as much of a issue from my perspective as someone that works with clients developing tea beverages, knowing where the sources are and understanding sort of the supply chain logistics.
There is an effort globally to be more judicious with regulations like the new strengthened organic enforcement rules for organics. We have witnessed several incidents where certified organic teas turn out not to be. One of the dead giveaways was pesticide residues. Just this last week, Yogi pulled almost 900,000 tea bags because of traces of pesticides. Talk to us about the role of food inspection, the sensitivity of detection for the many different types of residues, and in general, how we should evaluate the tea we drink.
Ultimately, it can be challenging to sort of do batteries of tests over and over again. It's a function of cost, and you want to have good statistics as far as, you know, the batches that you're testing and in the batches that you're not testing, and hope that you're able to catch, these residues. I think for the most part, you know, there's definitely levels and grades of testing. You can go all the way to the very high cost, high analytics, and, you know, you're able to find and pinpoint pesticide residues, you know, down to the 0.1 part per million. But that's not something that is, you know, commercially practical, right? So you have to sort of know where your levels are, understand, you know, and target those levels, and ensure that, you know, you're doing the best that you can in terms of having a very robust testing protocol and, routine of doing the right types of tests. There's a lot of different types. There's even the immunoassays that are used to sort of evaluate pesticide residues. And, you know, there's a lot of different chemical tests that can be applied, but it's just a matter of, you know, choosing the highest priority pesticides that are most likely to be found on different varieties of the teas. I think that as a consumer, of course, pesticide residues are concerning. I think to me, the food safety aspect of tea is that there's not really much to be concerned with as a downstream concern. I think there's a lot of levels and situations where people are able to track a lot of the major issues. And then as a consumer, for the most part, I think that the pesticide residues don't end up reaching to the level where a consumer is concerned. So I'm glad to hear that Yogi Tea was able to catch that and conduct that recall in a timely manner. I think that's usually the situation that we find ourselves, where we have a fairly robust food industry and food system where these sort of recalls can be caught before consumers are consuming them beyond a level that severely impacts health long term.
I'm interested in the difference in accuracy between wet laboratory testing and the new AI-driven cloud-based portable spectroscopic analyzers. You can now take a sample of tea or coffee and put it in an analyzer or on a light table where sensors monitor reflectivity, density, and color. The internet-enabled devices immediately beam the data into a cloud, which matches it against accurately calibrated images to create profiles or fingerprints. These digital fingerprints are then downloaded into your laptop or cell phone 3 minutes later with statistically validated comparisons that enable you to comfortably say, oh, this T, which is right in front of me, is fine because data points A, B, C, D, and E align. Not as reliable, perhaps, as a wet lab test, but is it good enough?
To me, I think there's good enough, which is sort of a routine test that you do, you know, on batches, you know, on a weekly basis, and something like that is cost effective. But, you know, there are always going to be errors, and I think a test is only as good as how it's developed. And, you know, in these types of spectroscopy imaging technologies, they definitely aren't always perfect, and there's definitely range of accuracy and precision. So, you know, having that and then coupling it with, you know, more precise, more techniques that have better precision in terms of instrumentation, and then sort of the numbers in terms of the statistical relevance of them, having that together is better than relying on one or the other, because one is just way too costly to do on a routine basis, whereas the other is not always accurate enough. So you kind of rely on the easier tests routinely, and then, you know, you kind of do like a spot check, you know, one every 3 months, once a month, something along those lines, something that allows you to sort of catch the potential errors downstream.
One interesting application is at a factory. Smallholders often bring in small quantities of tea, say 6 or 10 bags. If that tea's tainted, the entire batch, all 2,000 sacks of tea processed in the factory that day, will have a problem because of 6, 8, or 10 40-kilo sacks of raw leaves with too much pesticide poured on. Under discussion is a simple but effective test at the factory door. Say we're India, looking for one of 39 chemicals closely regulated by EU importers. Do a profile print test at the factory gate while weighing the tea. You know what chemicals are suspect, and if there is a trace, the factory will have avoided adding it to the export workflow. We're not talking about a high cost per test. We're talking about paying perhaps $100,000 for the most sensitive equipment. The cost of individual tests isn't significant. Purchasing cloud-based identification as a service for a monthly fee is a lower cost option. Purchasing the equipment makes sense for larger factories servicing a cooperative with 4,000 to 5,000 smallholders or a bought leaf factory that processes 50 tons of tea a week.
Oh, gosh. You know, I've definitely been trying to keep up with how these technologies work out. And I think one of the challenges is that at the end of the day, you're still working off of some kind of reference point with those technologies. They have to have something that is eventually a wet lab basis. And so I think in over time, as there's more data and more that those numbers get crunched, the accuracy will improve significantly. But that's more of like a, you know, use by use case scenario where, you know, every user has to sort of like input their information and that is used to sort of train the model. But there's definitely scenarios where an AI system, you know, hallucinates or, you know, creates numbers out of thin air. And that's, I think the key is, you know, it's trusting, but verifying, as they say, and there's always going to be a need for wet lab basis testing, just because you don't want to rely 100% on a complete automated process, especially one that, you know, can get so complex and become so bogged down by potential errors that propagate or something that, you know, for whatever reason ends up giving you numbers that don't reflect reality. I wish I could say to trust that completely, because it would be very affordable, you know, in the long term, and that'd be a huge cost-cutting action. But I think there is always going to be room for some kind of wet lab analysis eventually. You know, you sort of use that as a gate. Again, just routinely doing your analyses, using that as a way to sort of flag down potential issues, and then, you know, also trying to evaluate the pesticide residues or the chemical residues with a wet lab when there's a serious concern. It's sort of like just prioritizing, you know, how bad is it? And what's the potential for this to really get mucked up? And how much precision do we need at the end of the day?
I'm a big Simon Sinek fan. I like to hear people explain why they do what they do and what makes them feel like their mission is satisfying. Brian, what do you like most about being a food safety guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting story for me. I think it really starts with back in after I graduated from college, I really didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. So I decided to take a year off, and I ended up walking across the country from California to Louisiana. So that was about 2,000 miles, about 6 months trip. And you know, along the way, I really was trying to be very bare bones about it. And, you know, I'd be eating oatmeal in the morning. I'd be, you know, having trail mix, and I'd be eating 3,000, 4,000 calories. But it was like eating cardboard every day. And I kept this whole idea of the food's safe, but it doesn't taste as good. How do I get closer to a situation where you get food that's trustworthy and safe and consistent, but also tastes good? And it was just something that just stuck with me. And from that time on, I kept coming back to that idea, the idea of, you know, how important is flavor to the human experience of food? And, you know, again, you've got to balance that with food safety aspects. But being able to do both really well is such a, it's such a joy, because when I work with clients, and, you know, they run into an issue, whether it's on the food safety side or the flavor side, it's always nice to be able to, you know, take out my little toolkit of, in different processes and potential, you know, components and really sit there and break down, like, what's actually happening. And especially in the beverage space, and especially with tea, you know, again, I'm just an amateur, but it's so much to learn as far as, you know, what are the chemical processes involved, and how does that ultimately impact the downstream effects of, you know, am I tasting something astringent, or is there a bitterness, or, you know, how am I experiencing this tea as, you know, increasing my focus and concentration? There's always those biological aspects. And so, you know, a lot of the big things right now for a lot of people who come to me are, you know, energy drinks. But a lot of people want to move away from sort of the hard hitting Red Bull type drinks, or the, you know, the monster drinks, and they're looking towards tea and concentrated forms of tea as sort of a clean label ingredient and product. So that's always fascinating, because I have to take ingredients that, you know, don't necessarily mesh very well. You know, you have nutraceutical compounds and better for you compounds and high concentrations of caffeine, and they're all very bitter. And then I got to play around with, how do I make this into a ready to drink or a powdered mix? And, you know, which is very different from my experience of, like, you know, very authentic teas in a tea room, right? Like, it's like, but how do I, like, capture that essence, right? How do I capture that experience, you know, even if it's only a minute part of that, in something that maybe is a little more utilitarian? So I think that's my why, is always chasing, what is it about humans and flavor, and how do we experience, you know, enjoyment, and how do we take something in that is very helpful, but also something that really makes us experience something emotive and touch on some memories in the past.
Intrigued by what you heard in today's podcast? Would you like to learn more from our global network of Tea Biz journalists and tea experts? Remember to visit the Tea Biz website for more comprehensive coverage. That's www.tea-biz.com. Thanks for listening. Farewell till next week.
Produced by Atavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.